Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Valera Zakharov from the Mobile Ninjas team.
And I'm Tom Kinch from the Mobile Ninjas team.
We're going way out on a limb and we're having two guests again.
Two ninjas.
Yeah.
Whoa. I can't even see them. So we thought, for multiple reasons, mostly because people have been asking for it for a while, that maybe we'd take a show devoted to testing. In particular, a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to a new Android podcast, the Fragmented podcast, and they were talking about all kinds of different testing tools. And they mentioned this tool called Espresso, and they said, yeah, this is from Google. I'm like, wait, Google, I've heard of that company. I bet we could talk to the people that actually work on that thing. And then I think I was in a meeting with Tom,
right,
like the very next day, where he said, oh, I want to tell this group about the Espresso stuff. I thought, yeah, I bet I can make this happen. So we're going to talk about testing today. The danger in doing this is, of course, I don't use these kind of tools because I'm sort of way below the level where people would. So
you just write the code correct the first time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We obviously don't need testing at the framework level. So we're going to ask the questions and we're going to pretend that, you know, we're newbies not understanding the technology. And the way that works best is by actually being newbies and not understanding the technology at all. So why don't we start? What is Espresso?
And what is the correct way to pronounce it?
Well, the correct way to pronounce it is definitely Espresso, not Espresso. It is the Italian coffee drink that we all know and love.
So I should go back. Well, let's edit the audio later and I'll fix my pronunciation. All right, go ahead. Okay.
So Espresso is a instrumentation-based UI test framework for Android applications.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming along.
Yeah.
All right. That's done. Yeah.
Okay.
Does
that mean
short
the test?
And sweet.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Okay.
It is an espresso after
so
all.
So that means that you're testing all the Android lifecycle and all the APIs available in Android and it runs on a real device. Is that true?
Yep. It's totally like you actually had a person sitting and interacting with your app. So you say, you know, you write a test case that says start this activity. Call get activity, the activity is loaded, and then you say on view with ID foo, perform click, and you've just clicked on the foo button.
So it's as if that person did it, except more cost effective.
Yes.
Okay.
I would say it's a little bit different than a person sitting there because a person wouldn't really know about R.IDs and activities using the application. So I think it's a little bit more focused on the developer audience, and you know, developers would know the activities and IDs in their application because they wrote them. I would say in that case, it's a little bit more of a white or gray box testing approach.
So we've had instrumentation tests before. How is this different?
I think the main difference that you'll see with Espresso, first off, is the synchronization. If you go and look online, there's all sorts of questions of what does instrumentation, you know, idle sync do? What is idle? It's not really well defined. In Espresso, it's much more concretely defined as nothing is going to change the UI unless there's some form of user interaction. So when you tell Espresso, hey, find this view, and when you find it, you know, perform this action or do this check, Espresso is going to wait until that view is actually on the screen. There's no like bouncing ball animation going over it, and it's kind of just in the stable state. And it can also synchronize with your backend. So, like, if you know your application is fetching all the contact details from your backend, it's not going to run your action in that intermediate loading state. So it's kind of very intelligent in that way.
So is that all automated where, like, you peek at the event queue? Or is there, like, a very easy way to say, you know, when this ID is available, do this? Or how does that work?
So first off, we do look at the event queue. We also go and actually make sure your activity is on the screen because there's times in between, you know, your activity lifecycle where it's on create, but it hasn't reached on resume, so it's not on the screen. But the old instrumentation methods would tell you that the app is idle. So it waits for all that to happen, and then it finds your view and, you know, does your action. It also has extension points that are pretty well defined where you can add extra hooks to further define what idle means in your application.
Okay, so what internal implementation details, how does it actually figure out that the activity is on the screen, that the view is there, that everything's happy
right
and ready to go?
So we have our special subclass of instrumentation that first off informs the entire test, what activities are going through what states. So the very first thing we do is wait until that tells us that an activity is resumed. Once that happens, we get on the main event queue. We wait until there's no pending events for about 100 milliseconds in the future, just like a regular user would. And we go and also look at like the async task thread pool, make sure there's no async tasks that are active in that thread pool. And then we also go through any idling resources that you've registered with the framework and make sure that they all say that they're not busy. And then at that point, we actually go and execute your actions.
One important also detail is that we execute your action on the main thread. So while the action is being executed, you're sure that nothing else is happening. And you know, we actually wait for your action to complete and process all of the events that it enqueued before we get off the main thread.
A lot of people don't even realize when they write a regular instrumentation test that they're running on a thread separate from the main thread conceptually. So you'll see lots of people that, you know, will just go in and, you know, because they can get a reference to the activity, immediately go and start going through the views and the fields in that activity. But the instrumentation thread doesn't own most of the fields in the activity or the views. So
they'll eventually either get an exception or just die horribly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you'll occasionally get the very smart person that says, but I'm only reading fields, I'm not writing anything, so it should be okay. And it's never really that okay.
Yeah, here we'll provide the link to race condition. That's in a typical, that's a scenario that I've seen played out everywhere. Are they protected from that in Espresso, or are they typically writing things that are on the UI thread, or is there an easy way to annotate that they want to be on the UI thread?
So basically, the entry points to Espresso prevent you from even thinking about threading. You just give us a declarative object, the matcher that, you know, we apply to views. You don't apply that. And you give us a view action object, and we choose when to run that. So largely, we've tried to make developers and, you know, people writing these tests not have to think about threading too much.
So the way you write these tests then would be sort of driving the UI, saying, okay, start this thing, find this menu item, click it, wait for this other thing to happen, tell me what the text on that thing is, and then assert that it's equal to whatever I expect. Is that sort of the gist of it?
Yes.
Yeah. That, but I would make a correction without the wait. There's no wait API.
I just mean that you're saying when that's available.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
What if I wanted to test what happens, you know, if there's an orientation change or something? Is that something I can do with the test?
Yeah, that is something. One of the creative things that we've seen people do is they will take their view actions and they will wrap it in something that will trigger an orientation change before running the view action and then after. So this way they can, you know, simulate the user like, you know, turning their phone up and down and making sure the application doesn't crash.
Is that how, if I wanted to test that it works well in another locale, is that the same kind of thing I would do then? Or because I assume that if I want to test that my, if I want to check that my app works for, like, let's say, a Nexus 5 and a Nexus 6, I would make separate AVDs and I would, like, run the test on each one of those virtual devices, right? But if I wanted to test in some different locale, but I have to set up that new AVD with a specific locale, or is there a way from a test to say, hey, I want to run through all these different locales and check that things work?
I would say that that's actually outside the scope of a UI test framework, and we chose to put that in a different layer at Google. We've talked about this before in some of our public presentations. We have sort of a buddy APK that sits on your AVD and exposes some APIs to your test that allow you to, say, switch orientation or switch locale. But this is more on the device setup side and you know, environment control side, and not on the UI testing side. So I think our approach has been to keep things really small and targeted. You know, so Espresso is targeted at really driving kind of these user actions, user interactions with your app and system
for
setup.
For whatever the setup is for the device you're running it on.
Correct, yeah.
So then the developer is in charge of where they actually want to run that test, if they want to pull up, you know, different AVDs for skinning it or whatever.
And they can change it dynamically at runtime in their test, but it's just something that Espresso doesn't provide per se because we have another tool for that.
Okay.
So I wonder if we could take a step back and say, Assuming someone doesn't actually know what espresso is, how do they get from downloading this thing to actually writing a test? So what's the typical scenario for writing an instrumentation test?
Well, I think first off, thanks to Valera's very hard work, there's lots of nice documentation on developerandroid.com.
Just a few days ago, the TechWriter team released a getting started lesson for UI testing. It's a very good question, it shows you how to write a test for a single application using Espresso and also for multiple applications using UI Automator.
Yeah, so if I remember correctly, UI Automator, the killer feature there was that it could drive not just your app, but it could go into an intent, right? Like, so let's say your app is opening up maps, and then it could navigate through maps and pick a result and then come back. Is that still what UI Automator is for, or does Espresso address that, or are they complementary, or how would you sort of define the set of all the unit testing or UI testing frameworks we have?
Correct. So Espresso is very focused on testing your app and not other apps. We internally have a tool called Intento that is kind of like Makito, but for intents, so that you can say, I expect this action to emit an intent to the Maps app. I want to verify that it happened, and I want to have the return code from the map from that intent say activity okay or not okay.
Okay, so it's like providing a mock for what that would have done if it actually ran? Okay.
Because there's nothing more painful than writing tests for your app, except writing tests for other people's apps.
right.
Because if you were to write this large UI test and all of a sudden it starts failing because it is automating the Maps app and your phone just got an update to Maps and it moved everything around and created new widgets, that's not really too interesting.
Though you do want to know that your app no longer works. But apps, so
it may not be the case that your app no longer works. Like they probably probably work very hard to maintain an API compatibility,
right,
but a UI compatibility is totally off the table.
Sure.
Yeah, so. I think it's not like there is no place for these larger tests, but in general, people approach this as a path of least resistance, and they start out by writing these huge tests, and they end up being very slow, very flaky. And so our goal at Google has been to encourage people to write smaller and smaller tests. And with Espresso, you can write these very targeted single activity tests that just launch your activity in some predefined state and exercise it and perhaps verify some intents that are being sent out by your activity.
Is it single activity or is it like single app? I mean, if I have an app that has multiple activities, like one for preferences, whatever, those are all easily testable
right.
with Espresso.
Yeah,
okay.
That's your choice.
Right. So that's
if
really
you want
more
to go
right.
through the entire flow of your app, you're free to do that. But when you start writing tests like that, you have to keep in mind that, say, like, if you have some breaking UI change that is very early in the flow, all of a sudden you've lost your test coverage for everything after that UI change.
Yeah.
And that can lead to further changes. So once somebody fixes the UI, someone, you know, has broken the preferences app, preferences page because they couldn't run the tests and they didn't know.
Is it easy to compose the tests in such a way that you could, you know, write some driver code in one place and have all the tests depend on it so that if you do change the preferences, you would just go and change one place and all the tests would get that? Or is that like a recommended way to do it? Or do you really not recommend people do multiple
activities? Yeah, I think that we've seen multiple teams use this approach where they essentially abstract away the Espresso API and make it specific to their own app. And then the developers can really, they know the language of their app, right? And they can use it, and it's much easier to maintain code that way.
In the web testing days, those were like called page objects normally. And again, like it does make it easy to like have one place of fixing how to navigate your, you know, a particular screen. But you still run into the case where something very early on in the flow can break and you've lost coverage for everything afterwards. So while those tests have their place that, you know, go through your entire app and, you know, assert things on a typical user lifecycle, there's also a very important place for single activity testing.
Right. Okay. So that's for activity. So like one level, and so above the activity of the test were the UI automator, I guess, and below you have unit testing.
Correct.
Do you have any support for unit testing?
Yeah, so unit testing, I think, has been kind of an area that's been neglected for some period of time. However, recently, the Android Tools team has finally, I think, taken on this problem head on and released what we call the mockable Android jar, or officially it's called Gradle unit testing support, which now allows you to exercise Android code outside of the Android environment. And that makes, you know, you're able to write tests that execute very quickly and can target certain areas of your application that are very difficult to target with UI interactions and perhaps exercise some error conditions, you know, really things that are meant to be unit tested and not meant to be sort of integration tested.
So this is not actually testing any Android APIs. This is just like your code.
Yeah. It's testing the business logic of your application.
Which hopefully doesn't touch any Android APIs.
Hopefully, right. I think it's a little bit of a challenge sometimes in Android to do that, but yes, that's the idea.
Okay.
So the Android tools team did that thing?
Yay for them.
Yay.
If only there was someone from the tools team that could speak to this knowledgeably.
Yeah, I did not work on this at all, but I'm aware of it. Yeah. So
that's the most important thing.
Yeah. So I guess this is integrated with Gradle, right? So you could. So right. I think the way this works is that you, with the Gradle build system, you know, you have the traditional Maven folder setup. So you have, you know, your main source set. And you also have test sets, and there's actually two separate test source sets. Now there's the Android test source set, and you put all your source code that I guess would be Espresso as well, right?
Yeah. Instrumentation-based
test go in Android test, and then you have, I guess, just test, which is the JUnit tests. It is JUnit, correct?
Yes. It's JUnit. Yeah.
And so there, I guess we provide a version of the Android SDK, but it's not really the SDK at all. It's just mocks, right? So it's like basically stub methods.
Right.
So your code can call into whatever Android that jar provides, but it does nothing. You have to mock everything.
Yes, I think that's kind of the idea. I think that there was a tool that preceded this very popular tool called RoboElectric that actually went on top of what Android jar did, mockable Android jar did, and they also provided you some of the mocks. So I think that that's still fairly popular, but it also has been known to create some setup issues and kind of conflicts within the Gradle build structure. So I think that's why there was a lot of demand for official support from the Android team for this type of approach.
So RoboElectric, that library basically is an alternative implementation of the Android framework to a certain extent, right? In the sense that it tries to like fire lifecycle events in the correct order.
Correct.
So hopefully the framework team doesn't change that, because they're not testing.
Yeah, it's always
the issue.
I'm sure it never changes, right? Yeah.
The further you get from the actual implementation running on the device, the more you have to question the results then, right?
Yeah, I believe the first version of RoboElectric was completely decoupled from the framework. I believe in later versions they fixed that, and they were actually calling through to whatever they could call through in the Android framework. But I believe it's not, obviously not a 100% true kind of copy of the Android framework.
Right, so for layout rendering in the tools, we have something called layoutlib, and we build that from the framework by taking a very small portion of the framework, just the view and widget classes, and then basically ripping out all the graphics calls and replacing them with, you know, things we can do in the tools. Mm-hmm. And that alone is so much more isolated than the whole like life cycle and fragments and all the other stuff that the framework does. And even that, keeping that at fidelity with the platform is very challenging. So I can't imagine trying to mock the entire platform. That would be.
Tools team loves us when we change what we're doing with the graphics implementation. Loves us.
Yeah.
Because then they get to go touch that code again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm sure that code has lots of tests too, to ensure that's correct.
So moving on.
We actually do, and one of the things we do now, this is pretty recent, we actually use it to actually render layouts with layoutlib, take a thumbnail of them and do image diffing on the thumbnail. So at least now we know when something drastic changed. We'll know, oh, guess what? The calendar view no longer renders because, you know, this thumbnail is more than 2% different from the previous. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I like high-end tests. I know that they're kind of brittle, but I love how it catches everything, as opposed to the unit test, which is happily continuing to run, except turns out you broke the paint method, so nothing shows up at the screen.
Mm-hmm. You know. So you mentioned RoboElectric. Were they trying to accomplish UI testing as well, or were they working on the business logic?
No, I think they were really targeting the business logic.
Okay.
I think the idea there was that it's sometimes painfully slow to run an Android test, to bring up an AVD, deploy your APK using the Android debug protocol, debug bridge protocol, and you know, actually run your test may take a minute or sometimes even two if it's a very large application. And that's not something that is suitable for test-driven development. So I think they were really targeting test-driven development approaches by making it super fast to execute tests.
So then what were people, if that was mainly for the business logic portion, what were people doing for UI testing before? Was it sort of hand-grown stuff around UI Automator? So, hey, we've got the events, we can drive the UI, now let's write a test framework.
Well, actually, UI Automator is fairly recent. I think it's only from API level 16 that UI Automator support was added. Some of the frameworks that existed prior to UI Automator, one very popular one was Robodium. And personally, that's actually something that I started using at Google when I first came and joined the Google Wallet team. And I was trying to convince all the engineers on the Google Wallet team to write UI tests. And
How'd that go?
Did my research. Well, amazingly, ultimately, they did end up writing UI tests using sort of a customized Robodium framework that I built for them. Unfortunately, the tests were very flaky. You know, we started exercising them in our continuous builds, and they did not provide good signals. So
click the button, wait for 230 milliseconds.
Right. Yeah. 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 And how long? No. How long do you wait for?
Yeah.
You don't really know.
Okay.
Could you even reliably click the button? Because that was a huge thing.
Like yeah.
With Robodium, you know, you would call click, but would it actually deliver the click, and would it deliver it to the right place in the application? It was a horrible mess that we would spend a long time debugging.
Wasn't it just trying to mimic real users who often do the wrong thing? It's actually
perhaps it's
just
like brilliant, right? But it's actually incredibly difficult to issue a kind of a real click or a real tap onto the screen and make it work 100% reliably. I think we actually perhaps still haven't even reached that that goal with Espresso.
So clicking is one thing. Can you test like multi-touch gestures? If I have like a drawing app and I want to actually test what happens when I'm using my finger to draw some sort of figure on the screen, can I write a UI test for that?
So there's been teams that have contributed different types of actions to Espresso, like swipe and more gesture-based kind of interactions. However, there's not been a person brave enough to start, mimicking multi-touch events. And
right.
Actually, that was one of our core pieces when we were doing Espresso, is we wanted to make sure that when we designed the base of the testing APIs, that when the person who knew how multi-touch worked, really deeply came around, he or she would be able to implement it without changing the core pieces of Espresso, like the UI synchronization, finding views and stuff. She could just operate with, she has the view, and she has a way of injecting motion events into the system and go to town with that.
All right. So there's a piece missing that
we're really hopeful that with this podcast we can find that one person.
So is Espresso open source?
It is open source, and it is now part of the Android support library. Actually, there's a piece of the support library called the Android Testing Support Library, where Espresso lives, and it's part of the Android open source project. So,
okay, using the Android open source license and everything.
Right.
So where does it live in the open there? Is that the home, or is it also on GitHub somewhere?
It is. So initially, we actually released it on code.google.com. That was in 2013.
It's very trendy back then.
Very trendy, yes. We had no idea that it was going away at that point. we decided to sort of consolidate our open source code base in one location, and I think that the Android open source project is the location that makes the most sense.
All right. So you're just waiting for a Garrett contribution then?
Yes.
We're
still waiting.
What else are you interested in? That's it? That's the only missing piece?
Yes. User contributions.
Right. Well, one of the things that we provide with Espresso is also a very rich ViewMatcher library. ViewMatchers are used to target views and also assert on the state of the views.
So this is how you avoid waits. You provide a view matcher instead, which then the testing framework sits and uses the view matcher to pull until something is true. Is that correct? No?
That's not exactly the case. I think we're a little bit more deterministic than that. And we say, if your application is in an idle state, then going through the view hierarchy using your view matcher should find your view. Okay. And if we don't find it, we throw, we think, a user-friendly exception that says, we have not found your view. Here's your view hierarchy. And, you know, we're sorry, it's not there.
Yeah, okay, we've actually gone through and annotated the view hierarchy in the exception message.
Yeah.
It's a pretty miraculous accomplishment in ASCII art.
Yeah.
So if I run these tests, let's say from Gradle, and I get a unit testing failure report, is this going to be like the JUnit test report that I get? Or is there something, have you done something custom? Because, my pet peeve is whenever my unit tests fail, the assert equals thing in JUnit is horrible. I can never figure out, like, it only shows the diff region. It doesn't show any context around it, so I cannot figure out what it's expecting. So what does a failure look like if you know, against all odds, my instrumentation test fails?
Right. And failing tests happen a lot when you're testing for some reason. I haven't figured that out yet. So we put a lot of effort into when we detect these errors to give you a nice annotated exception back. So like, for instance, let's say, you know, you're looking for the username text field in your app and you expect the username to be Diana and instead it says Steve. What we do is we say, well, your matcher was searching for the word Diana and the text view with this ID and, you know, this height and width and location on the screen had the text Steve. So when that exception finally gets thrown, you see the difference between the two quite clearly.
Okay.
And that's also why we chose, like, these view matchers are actually Hamcrest matchers. And Hamcrest has done a really nice job of, by default, giving you good error messages when your assertions failed.
What was that? Hamcrest?
Hamcrest.
Hamcrest, okay.
Are these assertions, is this like a fluent API where you are assert that and then with object? Does it use that format or is it more the JUnit?
It uses that format. What Tom said at the start, it's on view with you know, some kind of a matcher. So with ID, r.id, .button, .perform. Click.
So as you're using code completion, you'll discover in the IDE to write the test, you'll discover exactly what's available at each stage.
Yep.
That's very
nice. Yeah.
So I just want to call out for a future podcast that we should always ask the guests, what does failure look like? It's kind of a nice personal question. So thanks for your input there.
Right.
Well, on the topic of failures, can I get a screenshot of what the application is like as part of my test report?
So we have this hook into Espresso where you can register a failure handler. And this handler runs whenever an Espresso action either throws an abnormal exception or, you know, throws an assertion failure. So at that point, you're in a point where you can actually, like, take a screenshot and save it somewhere. But externally, we don't really provide a nice mechanism of doing that. Internally, we have a lot more integration with our testing infrastructure.
So we have testing infrastructure that makes reports and everything, but it's really tied to internal.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
Espresso does not ship with like a Gradle plugin that does a custom unit testing report. Okay, that's another contribution that we are looking for, right?
The handler is there. We need the person to write it.
So actually, more in particular, a lot of the UI testing, either frameworks or just one-offs that I've seen in the past, use golden image comparison because UI testing is kind of hard. It's like you're not waiting for an action. You actually want to see what the thing looked like and make sure that it looks like the right thing. Is there support for golden image, or is this, you know, the mechanism or framework that people would need to then write to actually create that support? But that's only in a failure situation. Yeah, so how would you even create
that?
It sounds like that doesn't exist.
And you want to test that animations look good.
Mm-hmm.
How would you...
Even with golden images, like, that's an excellent question, but it's like a different topic. Like, I have run into this problem in my...
Videos.
What?
You need golden videos.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine that you would check in something like, here are, you know, 75 photos of my animation running, and I want you to take a screenshot every, you know, whatever, 20 milliseconds. And compare them with some threshold allowance.
Even that, we're going.
You would know whenever
too
the animation
far down
changes.
Here, but no, you wouldn't because it depends on when the frames occurred during the animation sequence. They're never going to be at the same place on the screen, except at the beginning and the end.
What if I could drive it? What if I could say, I want you to set the
you
time
could.
To do this?
Yeah. So you could actually seek
special
to points in the animation.
Yeah, mode. Animation edit testing support.
Right.
It's another library that basically.
So that would be a client of the golden image thing, which we'll get back to now, which is, Yeah, I take a shot at the screen now and compare it to this thing that you have in the past, and that I guess that doesn't exist.
Okay. Yeah, actually, internally, people have been building on top of Espresso to provide a golden image diffing tool. We call it Scuba. Maybe one day it will see the light of day, but it is a tool that people use to basically, like, at every view action where they perform a click, you know, it also takes a screenshot. And then after the functional test runs, it goes and has like a little story of running the test. And then it will go and look at the differences in the story and potentially also fail the test if there's very different, you know, visual representation.
Yeah, the word vary is key there. Yeah. Like the golden image tests, they're by no means perfect or even great because minor things can change that just throw
But I mean, this would be useful not just for testing. Like, I would love to be able to have that and then run my app on 50 different devices and be able to like look through like this multi-page PDF quickly to see what does the app look like on this small screen, on this large screen, in this other locale. And I can quickly see, oh, that text is clipped, and oh, this UI doesn't really work well on the Nexus S because, you know, it's tiny.
So there are some nicer features that Espresso has, and I believe they're in open source right now, where it can detect, like, if your view hierarchy has ellipsised text.
Ooh, nice.
So, and it can also see, it can also do, like, pretty strict checks that this view must appear over that view and they can't overlap each other. You can get pretty expressive with that.
So with the ellipsis, is that something I have to opt into? And like, for each text filter, can I just say, I don't want any ellipsis in this app as a... in one place, right, and have all the tests just tell me if that ever happens?
So there's both the capability of like explicitly saying this thing must never have ellipsis. I can never say that word right.
Ellipsi?
Ellipsis in them.
just abbreviate it.
Yes. There's also the capability of, like, you know, just saying whenever we're running on a view hierarchy not to detect ellipsis text. And you know, I think internally we have...
Yeah, so Google has been having a large effort on making apps, Google apps, accessible. And so the Google accessibility team has integrated with Espresso internally, and they have built a framework that hooks into Espresso and actually automatically runs checks in all of your tests. So you can simply turn this on with a little switch, you know, that says for all of my Espresso UI tests, run accessibility checks, and they then determine what errors to check for. This would be like one of the errors, for example, right, or a missing content description on a visible view. And so this is currently being used internally, and I believe that in the very near future, this will be also available in the open source.
So actually, my favorite beyond ellipses, though, is the ones where you have too many views for the size of the linear layout, and then the button on the right mashes up against the side of the container, like it just hit the wall really hard and kind of spread out. So
yeah,
you'd have that check too.
So we have some checks that go and say, like, you know, make sure that this view is actually appearing on the screen and not like has half of it chopped off.
And the related part to that would be, like, did this suddenly wrap? So with a button, if you have two words and it doesn't have enough space, all of a sudden you're on two lines.
Right.
And it'd be great to say, I never want ellipsis or wrapping
word
in
wrapping.
Buttons.
Yeah.
They welcome open source contributions.
It sounds like you're signing up for a lot today.
So we talked about Roboteum before. I did wonder, so it's hard to ask people this question because, of course, you don't work on these other tools, but it seems useful for people that aren't in this room to have a comparison of, like, what would people use different tools for if you're familiar with those? So I don't know if it's possible to cover, like, the other things that are common in mobile testing or UI testing space.
I would say that, in general, your strategy should be to write the majority of your testing in unit test land. So maybe there's this sort of 70-20-10 rule at Google, where you want to exercise your business logic and cover that with your unit testing that does not touch the UI at all. Then your next layer is going to be these smaller UI tests that are isolated from network calls and maybe only target a single activity. And then the next layer would be, you know, your 10% very large test that may be, run with the network and with all the dependencies. And so I think internally our recommendation has been to use this either RoboElectric or Gradle unit testing support for unit testing, Espresso for UI testing, and UI Automator for that maybe less, 10%. Although you could also, if you are just staying within your app, then there's no reason to not use Espresso also for that.
And also, like, once you have, you know, nice functional tests and the pyramid that Valera went through, there's also plenty of room for running monkey tests, which are very, you know, dumb. They just mash on the screen, and the way your test passes is by not crashing.
There are some smarter monkeys out there, I hear.
So yeah. Oh, horrible term.
Yeah.
anyway, that has its place, too, but only after you have some nice, well-defined functional tests to make sure your app actually does what it is intended to do.
Is Monkey Runner, is that kind of testing something that Espresso can one day do, or do you still recommend running the separate Monkey Runner tool?
So Monkey can, you know, Monkey is pretty easy to run. It's just like an ADB shell command. And it would be possible to do the same types of things with Espresso, but I don't know if it would necessarily be too beneficial.
What I'm thinking is that Monkey Runner is really dumb, right? So if you have a UI where it takes a bunch of coordinated actions to get to some other state in the app,
right,
Monkey Runner might never get there.
Yes.
Whereas, like, with Espresso, I could have it, you know, get into this functional area and say, and now go wild, mm-hmm. which starts, you know, mashing into one particular text field. And, you know, so it seems like it has more knowledge of the app, and you could make it do more crazy testing as part of the unit test. So, like, as a variation, after asserting this, you know, bang on the UI for 15 minutes just mm-hmm. to see if it
certainly,
stays
and up. I think there are teams at Google that are working on this type of stuff. I'm not really sure if they're using Espresso, but there have been multiple attempts to provide a smarter monkey.
Okay.
I believe the project is called Ape.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Don't make him too smart.
I had a question about custom view. So at what point do people go deeper with Espresso, where instead of simply using the stuff that you've created, they actually start overriding stuff, creating custom functionality? Like, if they have custom views, do they need to create custom testing stuff, custom matching? Like, at what point are they actually writing Espresso code?
Yeah, I think that that's very common for teams to, with, you know, custom widgets. I remember working, for example, with the Google Plus team, and the little Google Plus cards that were appearing on the screen, they were essentially, for the sake of performance, of course, they were essentially just bitmaps. And you had no ability to even say onView.withr.id+1button.click. You know, if you actually wanted to issue a click to the plus one button, you would have to write a custom view action that was very much aware of the internals of your app, that could take a bitmap and calculate, you know, from the view hierarchy, the coordinates where it needs to issue a click. So that was kind of very challenging, but it is possible with Espresso. But at that point, as an application author, developer, you may want to take a step back and say, hey, is that really a good idea? And I think that's actually part of the value of testing, is that as you're writing your tests, you may hit some of these roadblocks. And for example, these roadblocks may also be accessibility issues. You know, if you don't expose all of your elements to the view hierarchy, then your app may not be accessible. And so as you're writing these tests, you may catch some of these issues and actually change your app versus trying to hack around it in testing.
Actually, this is an interesting little segue or side point. So I was talking to Adam Powell on the Toolkit team a couple weeks ago, and sometimes we recommend writing custom views for performance reasons, right? If you have a really complicated view and you have all these things, you know, specially placed, you may end up with a complicated layout hierarchy just to get things looking correct. And some apps in the past, like Calendar, at one point got a big performance boost out of saying this is a custom view as opposed to a nested hierarchy of layouts.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a recommended approach, but Adam's point was at the point where the individual pieces in that custom view need to process input separately, that's the point to think about actually having a view hierarchy or views for those separate elements instead.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Kind of you're tying yourself in knots with testing for G Plus kind of led you to the same conclusion. Sounds
yeah, like. I think that it's obviously it's not a black and white issue, and you just need to evaluate what benefit and what costs you're incurring. So. I think
fast scrolling is important too, you know.
Right. Absolutely, it is.
See as many cat pictures as possible.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to ask about future. This is kind of a dangerous question to ask, depending on what you do in the Google software development universe. But you develop in the open, so maybe you're clear about where you're going. Well, do you have any ideas of like things you want to do?
Yeah, small correction there. We kind of have a hybrid development approach right now because our code base is still inside Google. And we actually just push it out periodically to the open.
This sounds a lot like another software project I'm familiar with.
Yeah, it's open sourcing at Google is actually quite a big challenge. And, you know, we've spent just weeks, you know, going through this process. And we really like our internal tools and we really like the ability to live inside this tool chain. But at the same time, we want, you know, to enable external contributions. So we actually have some tools that sync external and internal code bases, and we're currently using that kind of tool. But sure, you were going to ask about future plans. I totally sidetracked.
Yeah, no, maybe that's your way of saying I don't want to tell you.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm happy to share our future plans. So, right now, we're actually finalizing a release that will externalize the tool that Tom mentioned, Intento. And that's, you know, coming very, very soon. I have vowed never to give exact dates again, but it
we'll
is
coming. We'll see who gets done first, us editing this episode or you releasing the tool.
Yeah, well, it'll be a race. Also, one very popular feature request has been support for web views, which may or may not be a very good idea to have in your app. However, it is a popular request, and we internally already have support for that. We're dogfooding it, and we are planning to also release it externally.
So that means that you can, from your Espresso app, you can say, hey, find the web view in my, you know, in the view hierarchy and go to this URL and click on this link. Is that
actually
the gist of it?
Okay. Tom worked a lot on that, so he can talk to that.
Yeah, so like basically it is on web view. We normally don't take a matcher. It's an optional field to provide an extra matcher because you should only have one in web view normally on your activity. They're very heavyweight. So we try to lead people down that route.
I would say you should have zero web views in your activity.
Actually, couldn't Espresso just implement that functionality and just return an error?
That would be much easier, yes.
So once we find that web view, then we go and the ability for you. It's hard to say this. We find your web view, and then we've taken the WebDriver browser automation JavaScript atoms, and we've kind of wrapped them up into a Fluent API where you can say, on web view, under this DOM element, perform and click or enter text or whatever. So you're staying very much in this very Java Fluent API land, and we take your commands and insert them into the browser automation atoms and execute your JavaScript and return the results back to you. And we do things like making sure that when we execute your JavaScript, your web view actually has loaded a page, it has finished rendering the page, any frames that are within the page have also finished rendering. So we try to give people the same kind of stable platform to build their tests that they're used to when they're writing purely native tests.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah, if synchronization was an issue for Espresso, for web views, it's even harder. So a lot of work went into making that API synchronous.
Okay. What else?
What else is coming in the future?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some crazy talk about, like, right now you do all your Espresso coding in the context of an instrumentation test. We thought it might be interesting if we had, like, kind of an out-of-process format where you would be able to, you know, send commands maybe from like Python or whatever that would drive an application that was instrumented by Espresso. But these are all kind of things that we're thinking about adding these features. We haven't really committed to them or not.
Yeah, I would say we try to be very conservative with our API, and we kind of push back on feature requests and really make sure that they make sense. The core API, Espresso API, really hasn't changed since release. I think that kind of means that we got something right. And with an API...
Either that or you're really good at pushing back on any request.
But I think, you know, it's it's as important in a good API, you know, what it allows you to do, it's as important what it does not allow you to do. So we purposefully left a bunch of things out that people ask for on a regular basis, and we say no because we just think that it's not a good idea to do that in testing. And one of these things, for example, has been, you know, interacting with apps that you didn't build yourself, like with the UI of apps that you didn't build yourself. So we kind of, I think that there are some cases, for example, some apps actually have multiple processes. And in that case, maybe multi-process espresso would be useful.
So, but for right now, you send them on to UI Automator then for those kinds of things.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think a lot of actually cases where people want to interact with UI outside of their app, it's when they want to tweak some system setting in the system UI. And we, as I mentioned before, we provide this buddy APK that sits alongside of your test APK and gives you APIs.
Okay, so that's available. That's not an internal thing. That's actually part of Espresso comes with a buddy APK.
No, it's unfortunately it is only internal.
Okay,
we've talked about it externally.
So these requests you're talking about are coming from the inside, okay. All
right. Yeah, so, but you know, there's nothing really other than time preventing us from externalizing this also.
Okay, so that might be another feature that you might do.
Exactly,
okay.
Right.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right.
Any call to action? Anything you would like to
contribute?
Yeah, we're still looking for our first contribution. I don't know. Maybe we'll provide some prize to the first contributor. So, I know that, for example, Jake Wharton has mentioned that he's looking into it. So, perhaps
this will help us test our backward sync from the AOSP repos into our internal repos,
right?
Yeah. Which is probably not going to work. So,
what and something. Something was on my mind and it completely slipped.
Coffee, so, maybe?
No, something about contributions. I don't know. Seems like a good idea in general, but now it's gone. It's, yep. I don't know.
One of the other things that we've been talking on and off about doing is, dynamic analysis as your application is running and being exercised by an Espresso test or any other instrumentation test, really, is like catching things that... could be bugs, but don't necessarily break the functionality of the app, like a race condition. Like you might have a racy read or racy write on this field, and the test, going through its usual flow, hits that, but it doesn't fail because it's a race condition. It won the race. But having the test afterwards fail because this race condition existed would be very neat. There's been projects like Valgrind and things which have done this for native C code. And there's also projects like JTSON, which do it for the Java programming language code. One of the things I'd be very interested in bringing is an Android TSON, an Android thread sanitizer mode that you could run your device or emulator in, and it would report racy reads and racy writes. And so while your UI test is running, you're also getting lots of coverage from this dynamic instrumentation.
And you could use that to capture other stuff too. So, for example, if you record all the branches that were taken, you could help the compiler for optimization to know which branches that should be the default branch, for example.
Yeah, there's lots of information. Once you start gathering that, there's lots of opportunities to mine that for, improvements or finding errors.
Actually, speaking of performance, is there a way to use Espresso to do performance testing? Or how would you recommend people test for performance to make sure they don't have a big regression?
So performance is a little bit of a tricky issue because it varies widely between the devices that you're running on. Normally, most of our tests are running on emulators, which actually run faster than most devices when you set them upright. So when we talk about performance testing, I'm always very concerned that we need to be aware of what we're actually measuring and what we're trying to improve against. Because there's just so many factors.
I think there are certain signals that you can actually catch. So, for example, if you're going through your UI test with Espresso and you find that your view hierarchy has 15,000 views, even though your test may succeed, that's probably not a good idea for performance, and you can actually issue an error
at
that point.
I was more thinking along the lines of, when you, for example, use Jenkins to build, you can have it capture the unit testing report, and you get like a graph. And it can tell you when all of a sudden you've increased the number of failures. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking for performance, let's say that my app takes 1 second to come up because it's a slow app, right? I want to make sure it's already bad. I don't want to make it worse. So I want you to record that and graph it for me and tell me when it's actually getting worse. So it's not that, like, I don't know that for any given hardware that it's going to be like half a second or 2 seconds.
Right.
It's more that on this configuration, you have previous runs, and you're not allowed to exceed it by more than 15%, for example.
I think that the challenge for us with that is our tests run in data centers, and you may not always get that kind of, you know, the same environment, the same exact environment. I think if you were running this perhaps on a kind of a stable environment, like, you know, a set of emulators that always exist on one given machine, maybe you could do something like that. Yeah.
I think this is also one of the things where, because we work on the internal Google tool chain, like things like this already have existed for quite a while, where you can go and analyze your test runs and see, like, you know, actually graph the performance of them. Or we also do things like graphing APK sizes over time so that we can see, oh, after this change, our APK size went up by, you know, double. And we just sat on top of that and benefited from it. But in the external world, there's nothing that, you know, really nicely puts that in a good package. It's definitely something that, like, the tooling on top of any test that's running would benefit. Because it's not just, like, your UI test, but also your
data test. I know that Jenkins has a lot of support for things like looking at file sizes after, you know. So you can get graphing for test results. I just don't know if we surface in the Android libraries for your build, if we surface the data that's necessary to actually have all this stuff graphed. So that would be another useful thing for someone to do.
It sounds like from your earlier discussion that this would not necessarily be Espresso, though. Espresso does its job well, and this sounds like tools that could be built on.
Well, this
top
would be
of
like
Espresso
the so we
well
someone contributed a plugin for Lint with Jenkins. So when you run Lint as part of your builds, you get like nice graphs, right? So it seems like someone ought to do a Gradle plugin for Espresso if there isn't one already, and B, like, it should save its results somewhere so that C, a Jenkins plugin, could then, you know, when you enable this in your build, so you're building with Gradle on Jenkins and you're running these things, you get trend graphs.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yes, that would be really nice for the community to have.
All right, thanks for listening to our pledge drive today with donations.
We have to give away a coffee maker or something, right? You know, that can make espresso.
Coffee cup. There's one now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Well, I think we're done for today. Thanks for coming.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.